Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerino getting you ready for a special podcast with my friend John Norton, who hosts the Tribe podcast. We're going to be talking about the state of Survivor here in the summer of 2015, looking back at the last couple of seasons, looking ahead for what's coming up in the future, and talking about where we stand in the greater scheme of Survivor. Before we get to today's show, I want to take a quick moment and thank our sponsor, and those are our friends over at TrueCar. Because when you're making a big purchase like buying a new car, don't you want and expect a transparent buying process, a process that gives you the confidence to know you're getting a fair deal? So to really understand the power of transparency, you need to check out TrueCar and the TrueCar mobile app. Because with TrueCar, not only can you configure the car that you want and how you want it, but you can see what other people are paying for the same car you're looking for down to the zip code. So you know you can expect to pay for the car you want. Pretty transparent. And once you decide on the car you want, you can lock in guaranteed savings on average over $3,000 off MSRP. Then you'll be connected with a trusted TrueCar certified dealer that will honor your savings without negotiation. So when you're ready for a new transparent car buying experience, save time, save money, never overpay. Download the TrueCar app today. Everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerino here with some special coverage, some off-season coverage of Survivor. And today we are going to be talking about the state of the Survivor franchise with my good friend. He is the creator of the Tribe, a Survivor podcast. And he also has a new podcast that he is dropping right now called Buzzer in My Pants. Please welcome back to the podcast, Mr. John Norton. John, how are you?
We're dropping it like it's hot, Rob. I like it.
Yes. Yes. John, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to be back. It's been too long. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It is very nice to talk to you. I'm glad that we were able to come up with this idea. We had been trading, you know, texts back and forth about what's a podcast that we can do. You had this idea of the Survivor Summit or a State of the Survivor.
Yeah, we'll bring countries together. I like it.
Yes. And I said, well, why not? Let's do it. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a very interesting place in, you know, wherever the Survivor mythology ends, this is a really interesting point that I think will stand out for a variety of reasons. And it's one that is getting a lot of different kinds of feedback from a lot of different kinds of people. And this is sort of, and I was saying to Rob, you know, earlier, it's interesting, criticism in general, the state of that, we're in an interesting place for also, I think, in terms of Survivor. And you know, I was looking at the Tribe's iTunes reviews the other day, and we got a couple new ones since the end of the season, and one of them really kind of got under my skin. And I'll sort of sum up what the comment was. It was basically, well, it's like, you know what? I don't know why John, Adam, and Jay even do this show anymore. They have been so critical of the last two seasons of Survivor, especially, that it's, you know, it's clear they're not real fans. You know, they're not real fans of Survivor. They just let the other co-hosts do the show from now on because it's clear they're not real fans. And I will tell you, I will never understand that mentality. I will never understand that mentality. I'll never understand the mentality that if you are critical of something or you have legitimate criticisms, you know, whether you might agree or disagree, but, you know, in that person's mind, they have a legitimate criticism that they're clearly not a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, doesn't it make more sense the opposite way? Like, if I wasn't a fan...
Well, John, I'm a Mets fan, so I can certainly relate to being very upset at the thing that you love dearly.
Okay, fair point. But outside the realm of New York sports, I'll never understand it. But seriously, I mean, to me, it's like, look, I care about this show a lot. I've invested almost 8 years of my life talking about it almost every week. It's like, I'm a huge fan of the show. And that's why certain things bother me. And you may not agree. I mean, you may think things that bother me were awesome ideas, and that's fine. Like, we can have a discussion about that.
We'll talk about it. That's what we're here to do.
We're here to do, guys. Come on.
All right. Well, John, you're like all shot out of a cannon already. I was going to ask you.
I'm back on RHAP. It's been too long.
I'm just going to ask you, how's everything going with the Tribe?
The Tribe is going great. We have wonderful new co-hosts.
Uninitiated. For people who don't know the Tribe, could you tell a little bit about what the Tribe is and how you guys do your Survivor podcast?
It's funny, Rob and I, our podcast histories are on a parallel line with one another. We both had a crazy idea at the beginning of Heroes vs. Villains that maybe there should be some more Survivor talk out on the internet. And
That was your first season too? I felt like you had started before.
No, that was our very first season. And we started at the exact same time. I remember... I know there was a question in your comments that we'll get to in a little bit of like, you know, how the tribe actually got started. It was literally a symbol of, you know, I had been doing an older podcast for a while. And I had, you know, friends that, you know, the podcast community, we all like to cross pollinate and just be on each other's shows. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of realized that there really, in my opinion, wasn't a great Survivor podcast out there. I had looked on iTunes for Survivor shows. I think I found three of them, but I think two of them hadn't put out a show in a couple of years. So, I mean, there really just kind of seemed to be a gap in the market.
They podstated. That's what that's called.
Oh, is that the official term? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I sort of, and part of me hesitated because I was like, well, it's the 20th season, aren't we? Didn't we miss the bus a little bit? Like, shouldn't we have done this, you know, 5 years ago? But I thought about it a little bit, and it was Heroes of Films. It was a big season. And I was like, you know what? Why not? So I just shot a message to a couple of my friends who I'd done podcasts with, and then also to my friend Paul, who you've gotten to know, because I know he was a huge Survivor fan, the biggest of maybe anyone on the planet. And I said, you know, hey, what do you think of this idea? And I was going to kind of judge, you know, what to do next based on their reactions. And literally every single person that I shot an email to said, like, oh yeah, let's do it. It's a great idea. So that's how the tribe got formed, and we've been going strong ever since. We've added some co-hosts since then. My friend Tim loves to provide you with some musical bumpers, which I know
he's always a guy.
Very, yes. Very, very gifted individual. And our newest co-host is Shandy, who you've also had on, and who had a very interesting Survivor year herself.
Yes, she had a memorable impression that she made on Mr. Dan Foley.
It, absolutely, as I'm sure most women have in his life.
Yes.
I congratulate her on her season finale. I was like, you know, it took the rest of us years to get attacked by a Survivor on the show. It took her one season. So she wins, clearly.
All right. And John, before we jump headfirst into this Survivor stuff, could you tell everybody a little bit about the new show that you're working on also?
Brand new show, just launched it a couple weeks ago. I had the other show I used to do had ended because it just co-host wise, we really couldn't put anything together anymore. And my friend Colleen, her schedule getting really busy. She had a kid. I her schedule gets crazy. I know you'll find out about that one day, Rob. But you know your life will change actually when you have a kid. And it just wasn't working anymore. So I had this hole in my life. I had this podcast hole, and I always had an idea that, you know, essentially if you talk to 10-year-old John, I would have told you my dream career was to be a game show host. I loved game shows, still do. We don't really have a lot of them anymore because, you know, we have reality shows, which, you know, a lot of them we love. And I wanted to do something a little more traditional. So I had the idea to do a weekly trivia show. But what I wanted to do with it was to literally time it to releases in popular culture and that have those releases be essentially our subject matter for the week. So I just launched it. It's called Buzzer in My Pants. And you can check it out at buzzerinmypants.com or iTunes, all the usual ways. And every month, there's a new tournament between two teams, usually representing podcasts. And an extra special reason for all you guys listening to check it out is right now in the month of June, representing post-show recaps is...
Rob's Taboo Buzzer?
I think he'll be on next month. I think we had to push him. He's very excited, though. Mike Bloom and Jessica Leese, representing the RHAP community as well as post-show recaps. And so they're on for the entire month of June. And we do four shows. You know, we do a show a week and this sort of, you know, a big tournament. And every week is a new mystery topic that relates to pop culture. So this week, as we're recording this, Jurassic World is our topic this week. We did Entourage in honor of the movie last week. And then, you know, the past month we did, you know, Avengers, we did David Letterman in honor of his retirement. So it's always either a movie, a TV show, a video game. Something basically, if you like some form of media and you like trivia, you'll like the show. And what's great about these shows is you can play along at home. So I've had a lot of fun doing it. Check it out. I'm just starting, so I want everyone's feedback. So tell me what you think.
Well, I think you should also tell people that the idea of the show, Buzzer in My Pants, that is, I think you have a pretty interesting and smart idea. Yeah. Why don't you tell people why it's called Buzzer in My Pants?
Rob was hypnotized by our website, by the way.
Yes.
The meta joke to the show, and you will find this out from the moment you hit start on an episode, is that we are the American remake of a non-existent Japanese game show. So our announcer speaks Japanese the entire time. You'll have a lot of Japanese sound bites of him just insulting the people who are playing when they have to use modifiers to help on the hard questions. So my idea was I wanted the title to be fun, to convey a sense, you know, with the fun that we have with the show, to be game show related, but to kind of sound like this was a really bad mistranslation of a Japanese title, you know, for like the Japanese version that's still airing. You know, like it's clearly game show related, but something went horribly wrong when we threw it into Babelfish. So yes. Hence, buzzer in my pants.
Okay. All right, John, let's get into talking about this and the state of Survivor in 2015. And I was interested to hear your take on this because I felt like coming out of Survivor Worlds Apart, which was the season that certainly had its share of troubles, numbers wise, the show seemed to be on a very positive note. And I felt like most people walked away from the Survivor Second Chance vote very high on what's coming in the fall. So,
yeah, and I'm one of them.
Good. So let's talk about this.
Yeah, I said this on the show that I've never probably been in more need of a break from Survivor, yet so excited for a new season of Survivor. I mean, we had a lot of issues. I mean, really, I have to sort of talk about the past two seasons together because this has been a really weird period of time for Survivor. I remember, and I don't know if you felt exactly the same way, but, when we started podcasting, Heroes versus Villains, great, amazing. One of my favorite seasons. Even a lot of people who I know hate All-Star seasons kind of have to give that season its props. I mean, it was a great way to start our shows personally, and it was just a great season of Survivor. From that point on, we hit Nicaragua, which was a funny season. It was a fun season to talk about, but I always kind of found it. We always sort of call it the weird season, like the season that kind of didn't fit into any other box that any other Survivor season at that point had fit into. Then we had Redemption Island, and we don't have to go back into that whole controversy about whether that was a good idea, and Boston Rob, having sort of arguably a pretty easy run to the win, but interesting enough to sort of see him do that and sort of have him quite literally write the Survivor Handbook as he's doing it, which he would then sell on Amazon.
Later. John, that was the best point in Survivor history.
Amber likes a jewelry.
Yeah, that was good.
And from that point on,
Naughton.
We had South Pacific. I think we had some really solid seasons after that point, but we kind of had this weird period of time early on a few years ago. And I kind of feel like we're in another weird period of time, at least with these past couple seasons, because 29 for me, San Juan del Sur, honestly, probably my least favorite season since we've been podcasting about Survivor. One of my least favorite seasons ever.
Oh my God.
I did not care for it. And
shut your mouth, homie G.
I know. I can't believe it. How dare I? But what was so interesting, and I was talking to Kelly Wentworth about this, was, Jeff and production, they've been critical about other seasons in the past. Like now, when Jeff is giving his list of seasons, he will say, yeah, Thailand didn't work. Sorry, whatever. Didn't work then, doesn't work now, whatever. But he'll say this like 10 years after the season airs. Like a week after the San Juan del Sur finale, he's just like, yep, sorry, guys, the season sucked. We know, we'll do better next time. I mean, it was like immediate that production, part of me was glad because production literally came out and said, look, we know we screwed this up in some way. We want to have another Blood versus Water season. And that was first and foremost what was important to us. And probably casting suffered because of it, because we just so desperately wanted to do another season like that. We should have done it the opposite way, that, we need to find compelling people who we think would be good on the show anyway, and then kind of see, okay, maybe do you have a loved one that works? And this, and they out and out admitted that, which I was really happy to hear. But it was also, I know, very odd for the contestants to deal with that and kind of feel taken out of the knees by production, who to just kind of like bash a season right out of the gate. So, I mean, that was sort of odd. And then I'm glad they realized it. I'm glad they adjusted it. And then we went into this season, which was odd for, a whole bunch of other reasons. And, a lot of them way worse than just saying, like, maybe the casting wasn't that great.
Okay, well, let's take it one thing at a time so we make sure we don't miss anything. So as far as San Juan del Sur, I know that season gets a bad rap at times, but I do feel like walking away from Survivor San Juan del Sur, I did not feel that unsatisfied. Like, I felt like there were times, and there was definitely a point in the pre-merge of that season that I was like, not loving this, but I did feel like by the end, I was satisfied walking away from Survivor San Juan del Sur. I felt like it overcame its shortcomings.
I think the end definitely got better. I think the end was the best of the season, but I mean, I just felt like it was sort of like saying, hey, look at this beautiful roof that we just built on a house with no foundation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just felt like you had so many missteps early on that there was no way for it to end, in a way that would have redeemed the whole season. I mean, and I think you had a lot of also kind of meta stuff going on that season too. I don't think Survivor was really happy that an Amazing Race contestant won the season. Mm-hmm. I don't think they were happy about that. I think they take a lot of pride in, they like to have reality, contestants on their show, Hayden and all that. I mean, I think they like to sort of cross-pollinate with the CBS family, but I think they take a lot of pride in saying, we're the A show. And I think, when you have Jervis's, vote for Hayden saying, hey, this isn't Big Brother, I think that really sums up how Survivor feels about the franchise. I think they like having the contestants on the show. I think they like having them last a little while because people know them and that's going to get good ratings. I do not think they were happy about an Amazing Race contestant winning the show. I think they take a lot of pride in saying, yeah, you're going to do okay, but this is a whole new level.
Well, I think that all three of the CBS shows, I think they all have that. I think The Amazing Race doesn't want any of the Survivor or Big Brother contestants to win. I think that if there was ever somebody on Big Brother, they wouldn't want them to win. So I think they all kind of have that a little bit. So I don't think that's unique to Survivor.
You don't feel, though, that CBS itself looks at Survivor as the A reality show?
I mean, certainly numbers wise, it has always been the show that gets the best ratings of those three.
Because I mean, it's just my opinion. I think Survivor wasn't crazy about that, and you can argue, for the same reasons any of the reality shows might be for the same reason.
And I feel like Jeff wasn't crazy about that. I don't know about Survivor. Yeah. Like you could separate Jeff and the show, but when we get into like which producers and does Lynn, it's hard. It's hard. You can sort of separate Jeff from it, but I don't think that Survivor itself, the franchise, cares.
It's getting harder to separate Jeff from Survivor, though. Honestly,
that's fair.
He is the show. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people were saying like, he's going to leave one day. What's Survivor going to be without Jeff Probst? I don't think he is. I mean, I think maybe a couple of years ago, he was sort of putting some feelers out there about sort of what else could be out there for him in the showbiz realm. He had tried the talk show and all that.
Yeah, it was more than feelers. I think he was actually, he had another gig.
Yeah, I mean, and, look, that ended how it ended. But, I mean, I think from that point on, I think Jeff's kind of pot committed now, to put it in poker terms. Like, I mean, I think, when he redid his website, it's all Survivor themed. I mean,
To be fair, I'm pretty sure that Jeff's website was designed before he did the Jeff Probst talk show. And I don't think he's even touched his website since after the Jeff Probst talk show happened.
Was that just a theme he bought for $39.99?
Well, I believe at the time, I remember talking about it, he said that he was spent a lot of money on the website.
I know, I'm sure. No, I mean, but that's sort of a minor example. But I mean, for me, I really feel Jeff is all in. This really is his show. And I think it's been that way for a while. And look, I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but I mean, I think his opinion holds a lot of water. And I mean, I think, when Jeff, for better for not, is negative on a winner, that's kind of Survivor being negative on a winner. And you can absolutely argue that. And you can have the argument about, if there's a sexist issue going on, that because, Natalie was a female winner, she's not going to be taken as seriously, or she wasn't as loved by Jeff. And, there are a lot of issues that we can go into there too. But I mean, to me, Jeff is Survivor. When you have the host, who's also an executive producer of the show, at your reunion show, barely giving the winner any questions, people notice that.
I want to stick to one thing at a time. Are you saying the problems with San Juan del Sur was that Jeff didn't like the winner?
No, I think that's a minor issue that gets tacked onto the end. If the problems with San Juan del Sur was it was cast horribly.
I don't think anybody disagrees with that. There were some fines and there were some people that just were there that did not know how to play the game. And they seriously, I feel like Survivor dodged a major bullet by Natalie winning, when you had people that were going to get to the final five, and then, John and Jacqueline were going to get, Jacqueline was going to give up and Baylor was going to give up, and they were going to sort of just manufacture this final three based on what they decided a couple of weeks before in the game. Like, that's bad for Survivor. That is terrible for Survivor. Natalie going to the end and wanting to do her own thing and make up her own plan and path to the end, I think that saved that season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm fine with Natalie as a winner. I mean, I'm not a fan of hers or her sisters. I'm just not a fan of theirs on reality TV. But I think she played the best game. I think she absolutely deserved to win. So.
John.
Oh, my God, you fool.
Yes. How could you say that?
Are you playing my voicemails again? Stuff?
Come on, Twinnie, let's go.
So, look, San Juan del Sur, yeah, had a lot of the issues. Mainly it was casting. But like I said, I was happy that CPS, it was weird for the people. But I'm glad they flat out addressed it really soon afterwards. So hopefully, that's not going to happen again. And then moving it through this season, it was just like, wow, okay, this is an interesting place that we're at right now.
Okay, so we come out of Survivor San Juan del Sur, and Jeff says, okay, we realize that the mistake we made, we are not going to cast the show with an idea. We're going to look at the people, and we're going to find the best people, and then we're going to put them on the show, and then we'll look at who we have, and then decide what we're going to do. And we come into this season with the basically very similar to Brains versus Beauty versus Braun, no collar versus blue collar versus white collar. Now, did you have a problem with the way this season was set up?
No, I mean, I don't think it was necessary to do it that way, but I understand that they're going to want to try to gimmick it up to a certain degree. The reason I didn't have a problem with it is because, you know, what we just said, it was not cast with, we have to get a no collar tribe and we have to get a white collar tribe. It was, these are the people who are going to be on the show anyway. Let's divide them in a way that is marketable. And that's fine. I mean, it worked for Kai Gyan, you know, Brains, Braun, and Beauty, and that was a great season. Mm-hmm. You know, so I didn't have an issue with that. I think you're always going to have a couple people in each tribe that you can tell they're a little shoehorned in, or they at least could have been on, you know, probably one of a couple of tribes. But no, I didn't have an issue there.
Okay. So where does your issue with Survivor Worlds Apart come from?
I'll say this.
If there is one.
This was not a bad season, in my opinion. I don't think it was a great season. I think it's not going to be one that's really remembered, at least for reasons you really normally want to remember a season. I think, unfortunately, it's going to be remembered for people like Dan and Will. But, I don't think this was a bad season. I don't think Mike's a bad winner. I think it just, at the end of the day, was kind of an average season. Unfortunately, what pulled its average down was the behavior of some of its contestants. That's what dominated, you know, I know our shows, that's what dominated the media in general. And you could say, like, well, it gave us something to talk about, but unfortunately, it's not what, you know, certainly anyone's hoping for in a reality show or just in life.
Okay, so are you saying that the problem that you're having with the show is that they have cast people like a Dan or a Will that have these negative incidents that happen on the show? Is it that they've cast people who are capable of these things, or that you feel like the show is making a meal out of these things when they come up?
I think.
Or is it us? Are we the internet people
I think you're the problem, Rob.
I talk about what people ask me about. So we are the problem if there's a problem with that. So it could be that too. What do you think it is?
And I think there's actually a conversation to be had about that. But no, I don't think that the producers had any idea that this was coming. I mean, I think you look at Dan, certainly more so than, certainly Will in a lot of ways, because it was the biggest surprise this season. I sort of had him pegged as being that fifth place person, you know, the mustache Rick, who just we never hear from the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
He was very close to being that. And then all of a sudden we heard from him.
Yeah.
I didn't exactly understand his casting. I don't know sort of what stood out to them.
John, he's a YouTube sensation.
Yeah, I don't believe that, bro.
Play the tape.
Every time I pass that Costco, I think about him.
Yeah, do you go there and go do karaoke?
I've tried and I've been asked to leave numerous times.
Yeah.
But I can certainly imagine what Dan's audition was like. And I mean, this was a guy who was legitimately a fan of the show and, you know, auditioned multiple times. And he talked about how he drove to all these auditions, all that. Like, I get that he would probably, you know, be a character in audition. He kind of has interesting, kind of goofy look to him. He's a mailman. Like, it all works. I understand the package that production puts them in. Again, I'm sure they had no idea that all this would happen. I certainly don't put that on them. You know, people got upset that things weren't more properly addressed during the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But I always said, you know, I was saying this during the show, was that I really felt the reunion show probably would remedy that. And it certainly did in terms of Dan. But at the same time, you could argue my co-host Jay pointed this out, of like, you know, the burial that Dan got at the reunion show, that was 100% due to the massive amount of complaining he did about the edit and about Jeff and Survivor. That really wasn't a response to, like, look, we have the issues that you said about women. It was, you know, don't complain about what we, you know, did to you on the show so much, because then we'll really give it to you. So, you know, you can go back and forth. I'm glad it certainly at least was addressed. And I'm glad that the reunion show spent that much time on it. I mean, I know we had feedback in our Facebook group about how, you know, God, I felt robbed of a reunion show. Because all they did was talk about this. They would talk to Mike as the winner for like 2 minutes, you know, mentioned a few other people. and then spent, 35 on, these issues. And I understand that. I don't disagree with that. But at the same time, I'm glad they did it. Because quite frankly, what else were we going to talk about? Like, this was what we had to talk about with this season. So I'm glad they did it. So I don't put that on production. And I don't necessarily think we're in a bad state of Survivor right now. I think we're coming out of a weird one. And I think these next couple seasons are really going to be kind of a linchpin for people.
Okay. So it sounds like overall, you don't really have too much of an issue with the way that anything was handled on the show in Worlds Apart.
I don't know. I think it was done to the best of their ability. And again, I think the season just as a whole, it was fine. I didn't think it was a bad season. Am I going to be rewatching anytime soon? Probably not.
Well, I am, but that's because I got myself into rewatching all 30 seasons.
Yeah, good job.
But that being said, John, that I think the biggest thing that they did wrong, I feel like, with Survivor Worlds Apart was in the preseason, I believe that Jeff beat the drum too loud again, and he's done this before. Yep. And I think that Cara Moen was the last example of this, where he beat the drum too loud. Oh my God. Maybe one of the best seasons that we have. The winner, you guys are going to love him. Or he didn't quite say that, but basically this season has a great winner and this is one of the best casts we've ever had. And
emphasis on him.
Yeah. But he really just, got the word out that you have to watch this season.
Right. And to this day, do you know what he was talking about? Like, seriously, I mean, like, I 100% agree with you. I 100% agree with you. I mean, I think maybe a little bit of that was Jeff in production mode, in producer mode, as a knee-jerk reaction to 29.
Mm-hmm.
Saying like, whoa, it's okay, don't leave, keep watching, this one gets better. Maybe he himself would look back and say, I oversold it a little bit, but I 100% agree with you. And you know what also that causes a problem is for any Survivor fans, I'm sure, like your listeners, like our listeners, who are the savvy Survivor fans, who aren't the casuals, who really are involved online, really know the show in and out. We've talked about this for a while now. We are all attuned to look for a winner's edit.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish we weren't. I really wish we weren't. I sometimes wonder if I didn't do the show every week, would my viewing experience of Survivor be different? I'm sure it would to certain degrees, some obvious ones, so maybe not so much. But I really wonder if it would be a drastically different viewing experience. And one of those examples is this concept of a winner's edit. And I don't really remember people talking about a winner's edit. This is more of a historian question for Mario or Jay or Paul, but I don't remember talking about a winner's edit before Heroes vs. Villains, before like the modern era of Survivor. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I don't remember people really looking for that. Again, you don't have the internet talk as popular, stuff like that, but I really do feel like that's a fairly new concept that I just wish we didn't have.
Yes. Well, I will just a little bit of a spoiler here for an upcoming podcast that we are talking with Paul, and Paul is actually doing some research right now on winner's edit through 30 seasons. So we're going to go back. We're going to take a look and see if we can find this throughout Survivor history.
Your questions will be answered.
Yes. Yes. So we're working on it.
All right. Well, good to know. Good to know the our HAPA monkeys are reeling away in the backgrounds there.
Yes. So we are going to explore that. But I think,
and just finish my point. I wish we didn't have that, because that plus Jeff's words, I think, spoiled the season. I really think by the time you got,
I don't disagree.
By the time you got to a certain point, we said, okay, Mike wins. This all makes sense, whether you agree with it or not. In Jeff Probst's logic, this all makes sense. Big alpha male guy, seemingly nice enough, immunity run. It checks all the Jeff Probst boxes of the Colbys and the Boston Robs and, the guys that he likes. It makes sense. If anything else happens this season, then there's no logic to anything that was said. And to me, that spoiled it. And for the last couple episodes, when I'm watching his immunity challenges with all the dramatic music and, quick camera cuts, at no point did I think Mike was going to lose. And did that hurt the episode? Sure. Did that hurt my viewing experience? Sure. Would I not have been thinking that if I wasn't as, attuned with all the online stuff and Jeff's words? Would I probably be on the edge of my seat? Yeah, probably. I mean, if this was someone's first ever season of Survivor, aside from the Will and Dan stuff, obviously, this probably would have been a really compelling season. especially regarding this. I mean, they would have been in pins and needles for these last few episodes of like, oh my God, is Mike actually really going to do it? I mean, but for a lot of us watching, we're like, well, yeah, of course he is, because if he doesn't, then there's no logic to anything that has been said about the season.
Well, we go back, though, to this whole discussion that we had so much during Survivor Second Chances of what percentage are we and the people who listen to podcasts and go on the internet and read Jeff's interviews and know and remember things that Jeff says, because for at least 99% of the people that watch Survivor on a weekly basis, they pay no attention to anything that Jeff is saying. If Jeff said something in February, it's in one ear and out the other by March, and nobody is remembering it. And with all of these casual viewers that we're reminded of, with all of these millions and millions of votes of people that are involved with the show, but just not involved to the degree that we are, did they feel the same way about the show?
Right. And I mean, it's impossible to answer. I do think, though, that if you look at the results of the Second Chance vote, that's pretty darn good. I mean, I know people are upset about Shane and about T-Bird, but I mean, aside from that, this is a pretty great cast. And, you know, we'll see what comes out of it. This might be people's dream season. This might end up being, you know, their worst nightmare in terms of what actually ends up happening. But I think this is a pretty great cast. And I mean, I think you got a lot of people in that I know I was rooting for. I know a lot of you guys were too, that you went, God, I don't know if the casuals are going to remember her. I don't know. Was this too long ago? Did they not do enough? But, you know, in terms of a game player, this person would be perfect to be back on the show. I mean, to me, PG was my quintessential example. I wanted her back on so badly.
You love Survivor China.
Survivor China is my favorite season. It's my favorite season of the show. And I would have never thought that she would have even been an option to come back. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, and she was one of the first people that Jeff announced too in the audience. So when they got her and she was like the third person, I mean, when they said like that she'd be going back on, I was like, okay, we might really have something here. I mean, I don't know to what degree you can say like, well, you know, we did it, that we beat out the casuals, or maybe we're not giving the casuals enough credit, but this was a pretty great vote. And I mean, I think the hardcore fans really did come through.
Yeah. So people are excited. It's a season that shouldn't even need a lot of hype, right? It's just like, hey, we have all these people back. Like, there's no need for, let me tell you about this season. This is, you know, whatever. So I'm hoping that Jeff can, you know, figure out ways to get us excited about the season without telling us exactly what's going to happen this season. Like, hey, here's this idea that we're excited about.
I'm not going to tell you the winner's name rhymes with Mensimer.
Right. But if I was going to put myself in Jeff's head of what he was so excited about, I think he looked at this field where obviously he knew about Mike was the winner. He had this great character in Rodney who's going to be there, you know, tip-top toes with Mike all the way to the end of the game. And you're going to have this fire-making challenge at Final Four, and everybody's always excited about that. There was conflict with Will and Shireen, and maybe to what degree that got ugly back at camp. Jeff's not there. Maybe he's not seen that footage or anything like that. So we have big personalities. We have conflict. We have this theme. We have a couple of big moments along the way, and we have a really interesting and great winner. So I think that's what Jeff is looking at. Like, wow, this season can't miss.
Yeah. And I mean, for some people didn't. I'm sure, you know, some people were really, really high on this season. I wasn't, you know, completely opposite to that. But I just, at the end of the day, I think there are things that Jeff really does. You know, Jeff's his own guy. You know, if he was just a fan of Survivor, he wasn't involved in production, you know, we could just talk to him, you know, in the way of, you know, just talk to any of our listeners and just say, okay, what do you like? We look for in a season, and everyone's going to have different answers. And for him, he likes that strong, I think, especially male player who is sort of is that alpha male, really sort of, you know, drives like a linebacker to the end zone to win the game. A lot of people don't. I know I've talked with Adam many times on our show about how he hates when it's sort of an unstoppable plan that gets you to the end. He likes it when there's switch up. He likes when there are blind sides that actually do affect the game and affect the balance of power. To him, that's a much more exciting show. For other people, they're going to agree with Jeff and say, no, I like it when there's this one person who I'm rooting for. They have a plan from day one and they end up winning the game. And, you know,
not what happened with Mike, though.
No, I mean, but they have that one strong person to root for. And I mean, aside from him and Fabio, you know, it never ends up happening that way where they have to. It's like, well, guess I have to win immunity 18 times in a row. You know, it's like they actually did a good job. But for me, you know, maybe not the most interesting.
Yeah. In fairness, Jeff also loves Cochran, who is anything but an alpha male.
He's an alpha male in his heart.
In his heart, right. So there are some different winners that Jeff does like. But I understand what you're saying about that. So do you feel like part of the issue for Survivor is that Jeff is too preferential of the alpha males?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And I think we've seen that for a while now. And if it was just his opinion, and it's like if you're talking to him privately or he just gives an interview here and there, and it's like, oh, you mentioned that name again, mentioned Boston Red. It's like, okay, whatever. He has his favorites again, like any person would. But to me, again, Jeff Probst is Survivor. He's the guy. He is the figurehead, both on the show and off. I mean, it's his name as host and executive producer. He's the guy. When you think of Survivor, the franchise, you're going to think of him. He's been there from the beginning. His opinion, whether he wants it to or not, whether he means for it to or not, holds a lot of weight.
Well, just play devil's advocate with me for a second. What is it about that you feel like is a detriment to the show? Because I'm not even arguing that it's not the case, but why is that affecting the show?
It's a detriment to the show based on who can be seen as a power player. I mean, perception is you know this better than anyone else. Perception is everything when you're on a reality show and you're being you, but at the end of the day, you're not. You're going to be a character version of yourself. And to one degree or another, you can't control that. You can do it to a degree in what you're saying and how you're saying it. And someone like you, when you're on the show, you can control that because you understand how the game is played. Not the game of Survivor, but, you know, the game of reality television and just the game of, you know, production. And you understand kind of what they're going to be looking for and how to play a character of yourself that you know is going to be how you're perceived for the most part. You know, you don't always know, don't know for sure until you actually watch the episode, but you have a better idea. Not everyone's that savvy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will get out there and they are literally just themselves. And obviously someone like Dan's an extreme example for a lot of reasons, but you will have someone who just goes on thinking they're doing, you know, nothing wrong. Then they get home and they go, wait, this is who I am. I'm the villain of this season. Like I didn't, in their heart, they probably didn't mean to be the villain, but that's the character that they got, you know, portrayed as. And that's going to be very devastating for them. And everything in terms of the opinion put out by the show, which again, for me is the opinion put out in Jeff and vice versa, that will affect people's opinions. That will affect, if you want to talk about the casuals, the 90% of people watching, that's who it's going to affect more than anyone else.
But who are you talking about in terms of, like, who are the people that you think that this happened to? Like, are you talking about Dan?
No, I'm not talking about Dan at all. I think, look, Dan can, that's all on himself. I'm not using Dan as the excuse here. I think the main people it's happened to are the people who've probably never even been back on the show. Are the people you can't name when someone says to you, quick, 30 seconds, name as many survivors as possible. Mm-hmm. Because the people who may have played a great game, but for whatever reason, maybe their gender, and I don't want to be on that too much, but look, okay, there are patterns. Because of whatever reason, they are not known commodities in ways that other people are and maybe shouldn't be. I mean,
give me an example of a couple of people like this.
I'll give you an example. Okay, how many times has Jeff given an interview where he's responded to the question like, hey, why are there so many more male contestants who come back? And he's like, well, look, though, you know, they're the more dynamic personalities. And it's like, well, okay, number one, either that means you're not casting well because you're only casting stronger guys. Mm-hmm. Or two, you're giving them preferential treatment. I mean, for every, and this is an issue, I think, when media in general, but for, you know, every Boston Rob or a big time male players, I think you're going to have a harder time, especially a casual fan, naming as many, you know, Parvatis. And when it's like, look, okay, hey, 30 seasons, maybe that's actually how it shook out on the show. Maybe it's they just, for whatever reason, they've done their best casting. They have gotten more dynamic male personalities. That may very well be happening. But I can't imagine it's to the degree that, you know, we really get shown in terms of, you know, the actual, you know, quote unquote characters we're given on Survivor. I mean, if you want to look at the second chance voting, I think you have way more male characters on this in terms of the ones that people know and people are really rooting for than female ones. I think you know, a lot of people on there that you look at, especially in the females, as they were put up on that survey to not get voted in. They were put up on the survey so that people would pick the other ones, the more dynamic ones. And I think someone like Kelly Wentworth is a great example. She put on a great campaign. She made people really like her and say, you know what? This was someone who, if I just watched that season and then saw her name and face up there again, I'm probably not going to vote for her. She was in a couple episodes, had a couple things to say. Well, I mean, why would she be voted in again?
You feel like she was a patsy that was up there just to
100%.
Wow.
100%. I mean, and look, that's, again, that's not, I don't think Survivor is evil for that. I understand it's show business. You have to have a vote. And if, you know, if production wants certain people definitely back on there, it makes sense to have people that you don't want up there that you don't think people are going to vote for. I mean, I would do the same thing if I was running the show. I mean, I would, you know, if that makes sense to you, that, you know, it's the best way that you're going to get the people back that you want, then do it like that. I get it. But, you know, I think when you look at someone like Kelly, it's a surprising choice, you know, on the ground floor for having a second chance, because you sort of go like, really? I mean, even I scratch my head at that, because we didn't get that much from her. It's like, okay, it's a recent season, so maybe there's that, but like, really, there wasn't any sort of any other choice for a strong enough female who's maybe like her, who was in the game a little bit longer. But then we had her on our show, you had her on yours, we got to know her, and we said like, wow, this is a really awesome person. I said this to her during our interview with her. I wish we had gotten this version of you on the show. Because you talk about a three-dimensional, two-dimensional difference. I mean, it was like night and day. And I think enough people heard that, enough people got to know her and said, wow, there was so much potential from her that we had got no glimpse of. I'll give her a second chance. I mean, I really do think for a couple of people, that did make the difference with them. You know, maybe if they were in that number 10 spot being voted in, as opposed to maybe they would have just been in that number 12 spot. So I think it's a conversation that needs to be had about all of media. Like, I don't think Survivor's the villain in this. I mean, they do a great job. They do put on a wonderful show that we love talking about, but there is an issue with media of who are you going to focus on, and the people you're going to focus on, those are the people who are going to be fans, you know, that the casuals are really going to be fans of.
I think that you're making a lot of good points, but I think that you're looking in the wrong place. I think that it's not so much that Survivor has, or at least the production, the people that are making the show have an agenda against. I think that they would love to have stronger female characters. I think that the problem comes from in casting. I think that they're somewhat beholden, and I'm not sure if this is from casting itself, if this is from, you know, if this is from Burnett, if this is from CBS, but I feel like they are beholden to, we need to have a certain number of beautiful women that are in this cast. And I feel like often there are certainly exceptions to this, but the more strikingly beautiful contestants that we're putting out there,
be careful, Rob,
are less likely to be sort of the bolder, brasher characters. Whereas on the men's side of things, certainly we are going to have our hunky guys, and those hunky guys sometimes also can be those sort of brash characters. I think if you were to compare like the number of people, men versus women, on how many of these guys that are on the cast are super attractive guys versus personalities, I think that the personality number skews. Like me as a guy, if I was a girl, I would probably not ever be something that Survivor was looking at. You know what I mean?
Stop that talk, Sister Nina.
Like, whatever number you want to give me on a scale of 1 to 10 from a looks perspective, if I was a woman, I'm not getting on Survivor.
You have very delicate features.
Yes. But I mean, does it make sense? Like what I'm saying, that I feel like, I think that's where the issue is mostly stemming from, that we don't have an opportunity for as many super interesting female characters in the cast because we have so many women that we're looking for. Well, you know, she's funny, but I'm just not sure she's pretty enough. I don't know if she could be on the show.
And that's an issue in all of media. But I get what you're saying. I also just have a hard time. If this show was 5-6 seasons old, 100%. I have a hard time believing in 30 seasons that has been that big of a problem. That when people say like, oh, name your favorite female survivors, like Sandra, Parvati, Kim, Suri. Mm-hmm. Name your favorite male survivors, then they can go on all day. I in 30 seasons that we still have that big of an issue, I think there's a little more to it than that. But I agree with what you're saying.
I mean, I'm not sure. And again, I don't know, but if there was like some awesome female character that was out there on the beach, I believe that they would show you her. I don't think that they're holding somebody back. Like, I don't think that there's like, oh my God, Sierra is killing it, but you know, we don't want to have show too much of women. Like Shireen was, I think, a very smart casting choice. And she's somebody who, with all due respect to Shireen, is probably not going to be in a Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition, even though she may take her bottoms off from time to time on Survivor. That being said, that she was somebody who was very vocal and a strong female character on the show.
I think someone, I agree with you. I also think someone like Monica Padilla is a great example, who I think might be the prettiest girl they've ever had on Survivor, in my opinion.
Wow.
I said it. Look, I'm making a statement. She was one of the people I was most rooting for second chances also, for a similar reason. This is someone you cannot deny, very attractive girl. Yet, you can look at Samoa as a quintessential example of this for another extreme reason. I mean, that whole season was a season-long commercial for Heroes vs. Villains.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it was. And I feel really bad for the contestants of Samoa. Samoa on its own is a great season, in my opinion. I think that's a great season of Survivor.
I agree.
However, that season, in terms of production, became a season-long commercial for the next season, because by the time that finished airing, they knew that Russell made it to the end twice.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, we need to build this guy up. And certainly the first and foremost person that hurt was the actual winner of that season, who some people to this day still give no credit to, which is ridiculous. But I think that entire season had great characters. I think that was a great cast. How many of them do you remember? You remember one of them.
Well, I remember all of them, John.
Well, you're a great person, Rob.
But that being said, also, like, this is still a TV show, and I think that they're a star-driven media. And from that season, Russell was a Survivor star. How many other people from that cast, you know, certainly you want to give everybody their due in telling the story, but just like in sports and just like in other media properties, you're going to spend more time focusing on the star characters in the show. And I think that that's just a season where Russell's star, not saying anything about his gameplay, Jess was so white hot in that season that he pulled in all of the attention.
I agree that he was certainly, production-wise, it makes sense to look at him as the primary candidate. But how many other people could have been great stars? But we'll never know because we never saw or heard from them.
Well,
I mean, this was someone, and that's an extreme example as a season, but I think it's a good one to use. That season, that is the Russell Hantz show, that entire season. You could still make that guy the star. There are plenty of seasons that clearly have, okay, this
I
is...
I am the star!
There are clearly seasons that have, you know, an A number one star, but it's not all about them.
Your logic is flawed.
From the get-go, was all about him.
All about me.
That's right. You could have had other people that you could give him a little more. I mean, it was like we have a guy, Brett, who came one challenge away from winning the game, who we never heard from. We never saw this guy.
Yes.
And every single person on the jury said, if he made it to the end, we would have instantly voted for him because he's an awesome guy. Oh, really? We find that out in the final episode.
Yes. It certainly is an issue with the season. And this is a point that Josh talks quite a bit about in, when we get to Evolution of Strategy Chapter 19, that you know, but you don't buy Brett as a serious threat to be the winner of that season at the point that the other characters, Russell, are saying, like, Brett could win the game if he wins this. Just as far as being trained as a Survivor viewer, you know that there is no chance Brett is going to be the winner of the season.
Right. So I guess my point at the end of the day is I understand you got to make stars, and that's going to make good television. I don't disagree with that at all. I'm just saying there are instances, I think there could probably be a bit more of a balance, and then we might get more stars.
And just one more thing about the women. I think that Monica Padilla is a great example of this, where Monica Padilla, who you have said is one of the, or maybe the most beautiful woman to ever be on Survivor. Yep. And I wouldn't even debate that. I think that you can certainly make that case. But she's somebody who went on Survivor and knew nothing about Survivor. And I think that's often the case with a lot of these. We're casting a lot of attractive women on the show. And we're also casting a lot of attractive women on the show who happen to not know anything about the show. And I think Parvati 1.0 is the best example of this, of somebody who went on Survivor and really knew nothing about Survivor. And it wasn't until she knew what Survivor was that she could actually be somebody that we're talking about as a memorable character and a strong female character in the game. And I think that this is going to be an interesting season to watch, to see some of these people who, you know, many of them maybe in their first time out didn't know everything there was to know about the game, but I think that we'll be armed with all of the same information that other players had in their first season and second season. And let's see how it goes the second time around, because this will be an interesting test case for everything that we're talking about.
It will be. The difference, though, to me in with those examples is neither of those two are dummies. They may not have been survivor-versed. They're two incredibly smart ladies.
Which two women are we talking about? Parvati and Monica Padilla?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we're talking about law students. I mean, we're talking about very intelligent ladies who also happen to be very beautiful. So it wasn't a situation where, hey, we cast, you know, a really, you know, pretty girl who maybe, you know, isn't going to, you know, be a member of Mensa. And then they came back and then they were dominant. These two ladies, you know, one coming back and being dominant, you know, twice. And then another one who's going to be, you know, on next season, who I have very high hopes for. I mean, these are two ladies with all the potential in the world. I mean, Parvati, even in the first season, played up the flirty aspect of her and everything like that, but she knew what she was doing. Like, that wasn't just, you know, with nothing, you know, inside of it and just, oh, I'm going to be a ditzy girl. She knew how to play that to her advantage. And luckily, production saw that and said, you know what, I think there might be more to it. Because when she came back, she was one of those people that, you know, people were scratching their head about, of like, why are they having Parvati back on? But they were right, because they understood the game she was playing, and, you know, the rest is history for her. So I think with that type of casting, you go, you know, yeah, they looked good, but they weren't dummies either. So I have high hopes.
All right. So just to draw some conclusions for what we're talking about so far. So we're not going to...
What are we talking about?
We're not going to go ahead and cast a season based on a theme. We're going to find the best people, and then we're going to build a theme around that. And so far, Survivor has not had the opportunity to test this yet, because they had already cast Survivor 30. I think at the time that they realized this, so we will see what happens ultimately with Survivor 32.
So we're going to keep getting the themes also. I'm sure those aren't going away, but I think they kind of know how to handle it better.
Look, I think that's, I've got no problem with that. Yep. I think you got to market the season. I think Absolutely. It's a great way to get into it. That being said, we're also talking about that the way that the show is depicting women, I think you're saying that they need to, what would you say? They need to be trying harder to get the women to open up more, or to show what the women are saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's obviously going to be a case-by-case basis. Look, some seasons, there aren't going to be those opportunities, you know, and not just for women, but for men. You know, some seasons, all you're going to cast with your best of intentions, and you just get a dud. Like, that will happen from time to time, and part of me would be worried if it didn't, because then I'd be worried that there's, you know, they have too many hands on the overall product, because you do
too
want...
Too many hands?
Yeah, well, I'm worried about that for all the reasons, but, you know, you don't want to have the concept of this feels too manufactured. You know, you still want to have the feeling of these basically are real people, and they're going out there and they're trying their best. Hopefully they know the game. Hopefully they're smart enough. Every now and then, if you truly do casting in a pure form, you're going to get a season that just doesn't work. Like, it's human nature. You're going to have dynamics that just don't click. But more often than not, and Survivor wouldn't still be on the air if this wasn't true, you're going to get seasons that work. So, you know, I also partially would you know, partner that with believe in your product, you know, believe in the overall mission that you started the show with, because it worked and it's still working. There's a reason for it.
Yeah. I would say, as far as the sex issue goes, that I think we probably need more alpha females. I think that there are probably not that many in any given season. I feel like we try to find a lot of the next Parvatis, and Parvati is kind of a, you know, once in a lifetime player. There's not too many other Parvatis that come along. There's not too many other Kim Spradlins that come along. But I think we need to be looking and casting for more alpha females, and not necessarily just trying to find more Parvatis.
Yeah, we need to find our inner Parvati.
Yeah, inner Parvati. That's good.
I want all our listeners to find their inner Parvati.
Okay, sounds good. All right, John. What about going forward? Is there anything else in terms of the state of Survivor? Can I talk about some? Oh, just ratings numbers, because I feel like that's an important part of this.
Go for it.
Okay. So I'm taking a look. I'm on TVSeriesFinale.com, and I'm taking a look at the overall numbers for Survivor. So they have all of the CBS shows, and the number one show on CBS this season was The Big Bang Theory, which did a 4.32 in the key demo, which is 18 to 49. But even the Big Bang Theory was down 14.6% from last year. That was
I'm sure a lot of networks would want to have that room.
Yes. So still getting 16 million viewers a week. And NCIS, while it has more total viewers, 17 million people a week are watching NCIS on average. It only has a 2.43 in the key demo. And the other top CBS scripted shows were Scorpion has a 2.31 in the key demo. Mom has a 2.29. Two and a Half Men, which is ended, had a 2.25 in the key demo. Now, here is Survivor, which in the fall actually had a 2.29 in the key demo, which would make it like the number four or five show on CBS. Down 6% from last year, but every single show on CBS is down from the year before, with the exception of things like Scorpion, which is a new show, and Mom, which is starting to gain some buzz. So all these other shows, NCIS is down 13%, Criminal Minds is down 13%, Two Broke Girls is down 20% from last year, Mike and Molly is down 10% from last year, NCIS Los Angeles is down 35%. So the 6% erosion for Survivor from the fall is actually not as bad as the erosion on the rest of the network.
Yeah, no, I'm not worried about Survivor at all, because number one, it still does really well against, you know, its sort of opponents, and American Idol's been the classic one. I mean, it's only been doing better and better against that show, and that show now is no longer in existence. I mean, how many people would have called that a few years ago, that no. Survivor outlasted American Idol? So I'm not worried about it at all. And plus, in terms of production, Survivor is a cheap show to make. I mean, it's as compared to, you know, a network, you know, drama. So I'm not at all worried about the future Survivor.
Yeah. I feel like the biggest threats to Survivor, and again, in the spring, 2.25 in the key demo, and not only down 5% from year to year. Survivor had a strong spring as well. So good for Survivor ratings. I feel like the biggest threat to Survivor is, you know, if Jeff ultimately decides like, hey, I don't want to go do this anymore. Like, he's just like tired of it. And I don't sense that is the case. Or, you know, God forbid, like there's some sort of like production, you know, disaster that ends up happening. I feel like the show is, but just because of the way that it's structured and everything, like, I feel like that they could be, you know, vulnerable to some sort of like, you
all
know,
the members of the Hance family get taken out.
No, I'm just saying like a worst case scenario, which we've seen in international versions of the show, where I feel like that's something else that could be a potential iceberg for the show.
At this point, though, we're literally talking about acts of God taking the show.
Yes. Yeah. Look, God has always been a big part of Survivor, John.
Let's do it. Well, I know Jesus is rooting for Jabiru, so.
Yes. Okay. Anything else in terms of Survivor in the future going forward? So we're saying we think, other than some, I don't want to say minor things, but we don't have any major things for the coming year or 2 year that we say, if we do not fix this issue, this will be the end of Survivor.
No, I mean, I have all the hope in the world. I think, like I said, I was really happy when, as weird as it was, the producers, you know, kind of immediately addressed the issues with 29. I was like, you know, well, I'm glad that they see that and are actually saying something and doing something about it. I think that's sort of a good olive branch to the fans who, you know, I know they were aware, weren't, you know, incredibly happy with that season. So I think that was great. I think, you know, with this season, the big problems that happened with it, I don't put that in production at all. I mean, look, you're going to have weird things that happen when you get real people out there sometimes. I was ready for a bit of a break after, you know, the craziness of the season, but I am all on board for next season. I'm incredibly excited. I think we got a great cast.
Okay. And at the point that we did this big vote to put people into the show, John, do you feel like moving forward, we could see another vote for Survivor in the near future?
I don't know about the near future, because I think this is, I think the people who were on this ballot, which, you know, the ballot itself, aside from skewing a little bit to recent seasons, which, you know, you knew that was going to happen to a degree, I think was a fantastic cast. You know, I always said before the voting actually finished, it's going to be hard to get a bad combination of people from this group. You're going to have ones that you're going to prefer more than others. And I think we got a pretty great combination out there. But I think this group of people really did sort of check a lot of those boxes of, I mean, I know we've been asked in the past, I'm sure you guys have, of, you know, hey, who's that one-time player who never got that second shot that would be in your top five to go back? I mean, I think most of the names on people's lists were available. you know, and were able to come back. I mean, you know, Mr.
Not Vince Sly.
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, there's, you got to hope one day. But I mean, you know, is, you know, Steven, obviously, someone like PG, someone like Monica. I mean, it were these people, and including, you know, older players, you know, Kelly, even back from season. I mean, I think for a lot of people, you got to a point where you went, we're past the line. They're too old at this point. It's just we would have heard about it from now, or just they would have been asked back already. It's not going to happen. And all of a sudden, all these great names were on that list. So I think they're killing a bunch of birds with the stone in terms of people that people wanted to see back, and a lot of them actually got through the vote. And I found it interesting too, as Jeff was sort of going through the crowd at the reunion show and, you know, saying who got in, who didn't. He made a comment to a couple of people. Troy Zen, I think, was one of them, about how, like, look, you know, your second chance will come. It's just not this time. And when we were talking to Steven, he basically said to us that producers told him, like, look, if you make it on, great, but if you don't be expecting another phone call. Like, this really is it.
Well, I think Jeff was trying to be nice.
Maybe, or maybe they went, you know what? People seem to be high on this idea, and maybe, you know, these people got enough votes that enough people want to see him back. I mean, it could be one or the other, but I think regardless, I think we finally are getting a lot of these people back on, that I don't think we're going to see another vote like this for a little while. Maybe we could see it in a modified way where you're, you know, almost like the Philippines, where you had three returning contestants, one for each tribe. Maybe it was something like that. I don't think we're going to be voting on an entire season again.
Okay. So. True or false, we will vote in another season of players in the next 2 years.
So next four seasons, I'm going to say false.
Okay. You are wrong.
Ah.
Survivor 35. We'll do it again.
Well, there you go, folks.
There you go. 2 years from now. Won't be next year, because we only have like one cast of new people, unless this is the big caveat. If Survivor 32 is an unmitigated disaster,
right?
If it's the second coming of Name Your Least Favorite Season, then I think Survivor 33, I think we'll do it again.
Okay. Fair enough. Didn't realize I was on the McLaughlin group.
But yes. Enough. Yes. We're bringing it back. Bring it back. All right. So, John, I have some questions here for you from the listeners of the podcast. But first, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor. And those are our friends over at Stamps.com. Okay. Because Stamps.com is great. The state of Stamps.com is outstanding, because you can send mail from state to state in the United States anytime you want, because you have the machine to print real U.S. postage anytime from the luxury of your own house. How about that, John?
It's insane. Yes. I don't know what to do with this information.
Yes. You can get all of your mailing and shipping done without leaving your desk, thanks to Stamps.com. Stamps.com turns your PC or Mac into your own personal post office that never closes. So there's no lines. There's no Dan Foley to berate you, John.
That's true.
All right.
That should be the entire ad read right there.
Super convenient. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your computer and printer. Then just hand your mail to the mailman or drop it in the mailbox. Imagine before this upcoming season of Survivor that Jeff Probst can write that letter to Spencer.
Spencer has zero chance of winning this game.
And he will not have to go to a post office to get the postage to send it to Spencer's house.
I think what they need to do for some real synergy, as they call in the business, is I think Jeff just needs to mail the final votes to himself.
Oh!
Peter, then just bring the mailman, Stamps.com guy, some nice branding, and yeah, here you go. Let's read it.
There you go. I've got everything set up at Stamps.com at my house, and I love it. Right now, you can use the promo code RHAP for the special offer, no risk trial, plus a $110 bonus offer that includes the digital scale, which calculates your exact postage for letters and packages, and up to $55 free postage. You could buy at least two letters at an auction, where you're saving so much money and getting all that free postage. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in RHAP. That's Stamps.com. Enter RHAP. All right, John. You ready for some questions?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, here we go. Here's the first question. John Johnston wants to know, how does social media affect the show? Is it in a good way or a bad way?
I don't really like the social media aspect to it. I mean, and you know, we make fun of the hashtags all the time.
You were down on the Dirty 30.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue with social media is I really think the contestants need to have a complete social media blackout while the season's airing.
So you liked it during San Juan del Sur, because you said that was one of your least favorite seasons and they had a blackout.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the way to go. I think, you know, I don't think you should say to someone you can't post on Facebook or tweet about anything, but I don't think people should be responding in any way to the show. I follow very few survivors on Twitter for this reason, is that I am spoiler phobic. I mean, I'm quite frankly, I'm shocked that really I've never been hit with a major spoiler in the 8 years that we've been doing the Tribe podcasting. I mean, I know they've gotten, Survivor itself has gotten better about containing them, but I just worry that I'm going to see a tweet or see a Facebook post and just read into it a certain way that gives me a bit of a hint as to what's coming that someone may not even mean. But I don't like the people who are on the season actively posting about it while it's airing. I think you sort of need to be kept in a bubble. I think it's cool to interact with the survivors after the fact. I think it's cool a couple seasons later to sort of, you know, maybe get to know them a little bit and interact with them to various degrees there. But I don't like it while the season's airing because you're almost getting two characters. You know, you're getting the character on TV and the character that you're getting to know on the internet. I wouldn't think Survivor would like that either. I think you'd want to just kind of stick to the product that they're producing. So I'm not a fan. I really would prefer if there was always just a general rule that there needs to be a media blackout in terms of social media for the contestants.
All right. So you say Survivor 31, the survivors come back. You want them all off social media.
Yeah. I mean, you feel free to take pictures of your dinner and everything. That's fine. But yeah, I don't like them talking about the show while it's airing.
You better relax, bro.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, survivors are not going to like this.
All right. Well,
just shut up, man.
Yeah. So, all right. If John Norton was running Survivor, that's how things would go. Okay. This brings us to this question from Jenny Anderson. I know John, as well as some of us, have been unhappy with the evolution of the show. If John was producing the next season, what would it look like, John?
For the record, I do not mean the wonderful product produced by Rob Cisternino, The Evolution of Survivor. more than happy with my money on that.
Yes, yes.
No, I wouldn't say I've been unhappy with the evolution. I've been unhappy with certain choices that have been made during the evolution. I think the show is naturally going to evolve. And I mean, it is sort of the, you know, the classic television principle of doing the same thing but different. I do think when you've had certain gimmicks that really just come off as gimmicks that you don't need, I think that does hurt the integrity of the product a little bit. And again, this goes back to my point at the beginning of the show that, you know, if I wasn't a fan of the show, these things wouldn't bother me. You know, if I didn't care, I wouldn't have an opinion about it. I'd be like, oh, there was a medallion of power. Okay, great. Sounds good. Like, whatever. Like, I wouldn't have an opinion about that. But when they throw certain things in that recent seasons have been prone to more than a lot of older ones put together, you know, you just sort of go, you know, guys, you have a good thing that's working for, you know, obvious reasons. You don't need to mess with it that much. And I think they're understanding that. And I think they are backing off that a little bit. You know, we didn't get another Tyler Perry idol back again, which, you know, it's like, okay, good. You know, you can try things, sure. But I think maybe the producers are getting a little bit better at reading sort of the state of the fans and how they react to things. So the evolution is going to happen. It's natural. And in general, I don't have an issue with it. It's just some of the choices from time to time.
Okay. Scott Chupak wants to know, what would be your prediction for an all podcasters season of Survivor?
I think Shandy wins hands down.
Wow. Okay. All right. Then, speaking of Shandy, our friend Shandy wants to know, on a more serious note, how did she know we weren't being serious? What is your favorite and least favorite character type? Which character type hasn't ever been cast that you would like to see?
Ooh, let's see. I think my favorite character type is definitely, I mean, sort of, it's an easy answer, but definitely the strategist. I always said that I think Todd from China played the best game of Survivor in Survivor history. And this was someone who not only was a strategist, also loved the game, loved the fun of the game, and was clearly having fun out there too. Because that's something I think a lot of people don't realize, I think it's very critical. One thing that bothers me on reality shows is when people just don't seem to be having fun. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have issues where, okay, yeah, your whole alliance turned against you. It's like, okay, that sucks. You know, you're going to be doing a challenge you don't want. You're covered in mud. You're tired. You're exhausted. You're, you know, ill-nourished. You're malnourished. But you're still on this amazing experience. You're still making tons of money for every time you're not voted out. Like, things could be way worse. And I don't like it when I see, and this isn't just Survivor, this is any reality show, when people kind of just get angry at the game and really don't realize, like, you know, look, take a step back. You're doing something that millions of people would love to do that are never going to have a chance. Enjoy it. You know, and I think most people on these shows do. I think most of them come off, you know, with that attitude. But it's important that you have fun out there. It really is. It is important, not to sound like, you know, a junior high basketball coach, but it's important that you're having fun while you're doing this, because I do think that matters. And I think not just for you playing it, but I think it comes through. I think people watching, you know, they really do tend to get that sense from you, whether you are or not. And I think it does matter. I mean, would you agree with that?
My birthday. You know what I mean? It's my damn birthday.
Yeah, I think it's very important to try to have fun when you're playing Survivor.
Have fun even on your birthday.
Even if you have to do dishes on your birthday.
Hey, I mean, Jeff gives you a cake at the end.
You get a cake at your end.
It's all worth it.
All right, but John, who is the cast type that you have never seen on the show that you want to see?
A young man who just wants to dance.
Is that you?
That's all I'm really comfortable saying.
Okay. I would like to see a psychic. Wouldn't you want to see a psychic on Survivor? Wouldn't that be ratings gold?
Yeah, but, you know, it's going to be the island spirits weren't speaking to me. It's going to be that's not how it works. I mean, it would be funny, but I mean.
But wouldn't you want to see every time when, like, when they're like, well, oh, you were the psychic. Well, why didn't you tell us? Oh, and then they'll be like in the first episode, like, I don't know if I'm going to tell my tribe that I'm a psychic.
It's going to be a total like Tony, I'm a construction worker.
So. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to tell them that I'm a veterinarian.
Yeah.
And so they won't know that I'm a psychic. And then all the times they'll talk about like, oh, I knew that was going to happen. Why didn't I say anything?
All right. Split the difference. Dancing psychic.
Dancing psychic.
Let's cast it, Mark Burnett.
All right. There you go. So let's take this question. Sandra Schmidt Brooke wants to know, ask John if on a rewatch of a season, has he ever originally hated a season or character and on the rewatch liked the season or character?
I'll say more than maybe a season or character, I'll say there are episodes I can maybe appreciate it because I watch every show, every episode twice. I'll watch it live just to enjoy it. And then I'll watch it again the day we're going to record to write the recap of it. There'll be episodes I watch it the first time. I'll go like, not that much happened. But then I'll watch it again the second time and I'll probably appreciate it more for the character moments rather than sort of the plot that we're watching it for the first time through. In terms of if there was a season that hit me, I would probably say Panama, Exile Island. I think the first time through, it was sort of an average season, but then I really, really appreciated it. I mean, it's such a great cast and the characters really make that season that I think I really enjoyed it better the second time through.
Interesting. And now, when you talk about an episode, is that on a given week? Like, do you watch the episode more than once before you do the podcast?
Yeah. I'll watch it when it airs live, just sitting back enjoying it, not taking notes or anything. And then I'll watch it, you know, a day or so later to actually write the recap for the show.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely had that with Evolution of Strategy where there's a season that I don't really remember a lot about. And I go back and I watch it like, oh, that was actually really good. But with a episode from week to week, like I feel like if it was good when I started watching it or when I watched it and then did the know-it-alls and then I watch it later, it's still going to be good. And if it wasn't that good, it's still not going to be that good in a little bit.
So you need more time separating it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's take another question. And this is going back to something we talked about earlier. Farzin V wants to know, we've recently seen Amazing Race and Big Brother contestants on Survivor. Who from Survivor is best for Big Brother and the Amazing Race?
One word, Rodney.
Rodney. You want to see Rodney in the Big Brother house?
I think he's a natural fit for Big Brother. I think Amazing Race might be funnier. So I think I'm going to pick Amazing Race for him.
The problem is like these big jacked guys and not that Rodney, I don't want to make it sound like he is like this huge guy, but I feel like putting them in this box in the Big Brother house, like it never goes well.
No, the box is going to explode.
The box is going to explode and it's good TV, but it never really goes well. So I feel like the Amazing Race might be more his strength.
Well, I didn't say any of them would go well.
Yes.
See it.
Yes. But I feel like you could find another guy like a Rodney to put on Big Brother. I feel like the Amazing Race would be fun. Who do you want to see him run the Amazing Race with?
His birthday cake.
His birthday cake. Not his mom?
No.
No.
Just his cake.
Okay. All right. This is from John DeGrief, who says, what would a season full of strategic players look like? And why do people say it wouldn't work?
We're about to find out.
You feel like that's what this is this season?
That's absolutely what the season is, yeah. And I think he's right that this might be the greatest season ever, or it could horribly backfire.
But would that look like if they say, like, oh, if you cast a season where everybody's a strategist, it's going to be bad?
Well, I think you need balance in a cast. And I think as much as you might say someone like Wu or someone like Joe were a little ineffective or sort of one-dimensional players, I think you need people like that to balance out the season and the cast. I really do. I mean, I think if you have all these, you know, as people have been saying, quote unquote, game bots playing, some, you know, people like Steven and Spencer, I mean, all these hardcore strategists, you can't have that be the whole cast. I mean, because then I think it could end up being kind of a one-dimensional game. And quite frankly, sometimes you need, you know, Survivor, you need Wu to take Tony to the end and not Cass, who 99.9% of people would have to get an easy win. I mean, you need sometimes people making kind of dumb decisions in the, you know, story of the game that's being told, but those give you the memorable moments and those give you the great story arcs for Tony. You know, I mean, his win kind of has this magical quality because it wasn't just, oh, it was in his hands, he did everything perfect and it gave him an easy win. It's like, no, I mean, he needed some kind of lucky stuff to happen to get him there. And you need that in storytelling purposes. I think a lot of people have a dream season of everyone's the super strategist and, oh, put them together and it's going to be crazy. It's going to be the best thing ever.
And people hated the dream season.
Yeah. Well, for me, my dream season is get all them with dreams. And that's the right combination to get him back there too. But I think if you get all those people together, all these people who kind of play in a similar fashion, maybe it could go really well. But I think there's a huge potential that it could end up kind of being boring, which you would never think you would say, but I think you have to have a balance. And I also think for that same reason, there's a very unlikely chance you're going to have a final two or a final three of these super strategists. I just think it's not going to happen.
Yeah. You need a mix. You need a mix of the people that are making the moves and the people that are the pawns. And you need to have a good balance. You can't have all pawns, can't have all people that are going to be making the moves, because ultimately, I think if you had everybody who was there, all the people that are going to be making the moves, I think they'd sort of, you know, figure out where they are and say, okay, this is what's best for me. Let's just keep doing this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay, we have the numbers. Like, it's in all of our best interests to all stick together and get to four together. Like, that makes a lot of sense. And then, like, you wouldn't have anybody there. I'm not going to go with you because it's not in my best interest. I've thought this all through. Like, you need the people who aren't thinking everything through.
Yeah, absolutely. And you need the people who are thinking everything through to use the people who aren't thinking everything through.
Yeah. So that's important also. Okay. One last question for you from Paul Asleson. He wants to know,
how'd that guy get in here?
John has historically supported a final three over a final two after 30 seasons, which is better. I actually think the numbers are pretty close at this point, if not a 15-15 split of final threes versus final twos.
Yeah,
John, you prefer the final three?
I do, yeah. I prefer it for the reason that Survivor started it, which was it stops bringing, you know, someone bringing a completely hateable person to the end and just getting an easy win and making a final tribal council null and void.
Stephen Fishback?
Well, no, I mean, the more people know about Token Chains, you know, I think the fact that he got zero votes is kind of ridiculous, but, you know, that's kind of its own situation. I like a final tribal council where people have to plead their case, where they really have to plead their case. And a lot of times the argument that's made counter to this, and even though we've seen this change a little bit in the past couple seasons, is, well, only two people ever get votes anyway. There's always the blank third place who just doesn't get any votes. And it's like, yeah, a lot of times it happens. And you could say, well, in that case, it doesn't matter if there's a final three. It didn't negatively affect the game in that way. Basically, it just was a final two with one person, you know, sitting there watching. But I think conceptually, if you have more people arguing their case at the end, it does make it more compelling. I mean, I personally like to switch up a little bit. Like, I liked it when they did in Token Chains. All of a sudden, it's like, I'm surprised it's actually a final two. And like in Fans versus Favorites, which was kind of due to a numbers situation. But I think it's fun to have a mix-up every now and then. But generally, I like the reasoning for the final three, and I'm fine with it.
Okay. On paper...
Take that, Paul.
Yeah, on paper, I feel like I still like the final two, but, you know, I've grown to accept the final three. All right, how about that?
Yeah, we're all learning and growing.
We're all learning. All right, John, very fun conversation here today. We talked about a lot of things. We covered a lot of ground, and I think we covered a lot of issues.
I think so, too. It was good talking to you. We'll do this more often.
Yes. All right, so, John, how do people find the Tribe podcast?
If you're not sick of hearing people talk about Survivor, you can go over to us at survivorpodcast.com or just go on iTunes with the Tribe, a Survivor podcast. And then, especially in the off season, if you want a little something different, check out my trivia show and give me some feedback on it. Buzzer in my pants. And I love saying that. It makes Rob laugh every time.
Yes. Now, are you guys doing shows for the summer, or is this it until season 31 comes around?
We'll be doing a few shows. We got a few things lined up. You know, we don't do it every week. But also we have the Survivor Historians that are on our feed as well.
So
they make up some ground. So they're finishing up Panama Exile Island right now. So part 3 will be up a little bit there. So you can listen to them on our feed as well. And then, yeah, we'll have a few surprises planned. But I mean, time goes fast. We'll be doing our preview show in no time.
Yeah. It's right around the corner.
I'm excited.
All right. Of course, you could follow John on Twitter. He's at John Norton. There you go. Good. You keep it simple. No underscores. Very good.
Yeah, so that's what helps when you're an early adopter. Like, our kids are going to have to add like 25 like Z's at the end of any handle to get it.
Yes.
We deserve Dominic's stuff now.
No, we already got it. We had to get Dominic with an underscore between each character.
Okay. I'm very sorry.
Yes. His actual Twitter name is 130 characters. So you can only send him short messages.
Well, keep it simple. I like it, though.
Yeah. All right, John, great job.
Great talking to you, Rob. Thanks.
All right, take care. All right, everybody, there you have it. That was John Norton back here on Rob Has a Podcast, talking about everything going on with the state of Survivor. So we have a couple more fun shows coming up this week. We are going to have our next podcast is going to be something. It's going to be a podcast that I thought of this past week. This idea is called the top 5 most WTF exit interviews of all time. So it's going to be a clip show of a bunch of different exit interviews that I wanted to put together for you guys to hear one more time. And then we are going to be getting into Big Brother coming up. It's going to be the preview of Big Brother 17. We are going to start that later in the week. Right now, I think I'm thinking Wednesday and Thursday night as a two-night premiere, but stay tuned on exactly how we're going to do our preview of Big Brother 17, because it is about that time of year. Of course, you can get your Big Brother live feeds from us at robswebsite.com/live feeds, and also play in Big Brother Bingo and potentially win $500 playing Big Brother Bingo. You can find out all the information on how to get your bingo card for free at robswebsite.com/bingo. All right, everybody, looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. We covered a lot of ground in this episode, so anxious to hear what you guys have to say. I think that there will be a lot of comments on this podcast. I think you guys are going to have a lot to say about everything discussed here, so just try to keep it civil. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.